her voice becoming quick and high. "They must do it in the dark. My masters will eat the bodies."
"It shall be done."
"Is this well, Khosyl?"
"It is well, mistress."
"Then let us go," Arha said, very shrill. She turned and hurried back to the wooden door, and out of the room of chains into the blackness of the tunnel. It seemed sweet and peaceful as a starless night, silent, without sight, or light, or life. She plunged into the clean darkness, hurried forward through it like a swimmer through water. Khosyl hastened along, behind her and getting farther behind, panting, lumbering. Without hesitation, Arha repeated the missed and taken turnings as they had come, skirted the vast echoing undertomb, and crept, bent over, up the last long tunnel to the shut door of rock. There she crouched down, and felt for the long key on the ring at her waist. She found it, but could not find the keyhole. There was no pinprick of light in the invisible wall before her. Her fingers groped over it, seeking lock or bolt or handle, and finding nothing. Where must the key go? How could she get out? "Mistress!" Khosyl's voice, magnified by echoes, hissed and boomed far behind her. "Mistress, the door will not open from inside. There is no way out. There is no return." Arha crouched against the rock. She said nothing. "Arha! I am here.
Come!"
She came, crawling on hands and knees along the passage like a dog to Khosyl's skirts.
"To the right! Hurry, I must not linger here. It is not my place. Follow me."
Arha got to her feet and held on to Khosyl's robes. They went forward, following the strangely carven wall of the cavern to the right for a long way, then entering a black gap in the blackness. They went upward now, in tunnels, by stairs. The girl still clung to the woman's robe. Her eyes were shut. There was light, red through her eyelids. She thought it was the torch-lit room full of smoke again, and did not open her eyes. But the air smelt sweetish, dry and moldy. A familiar smell. And her feet were on a staircase, steep almost as a ladder. She let go of Khosyl's robe and looked. A trap door was open over her head. She scrambled through it after Khosyl. It led her into a room she knew, a little stone cell containing a couple of chests and iron boxes, in the warren of rooms behind the throne room of the hall. Daylight glimmered gray and faint in the hallway outside its door.
"The other, the prisoner's door, leads only into the tunnels. It does not lead out. This is the only way out. If there is any other way, I do not know of it. Nor does Thar. You must remember it for yourself, if there is one, but I do not think there is."
Khosyl still spoke in an undertone, and with a kind of spitefulness. Her heavy face within the black cowl was pale and damp with sweat. "I don't remember the turnings to this way out."
"I'll tell them to you, once. You must remember them. Next time I will not come with you. This is not my place. You must come alone."
The girl nodded. She looked up into the older woman's face and thought how strange it looked. Pale with scarcely mastered fear and yet triumphant, as if Khosyl gloated over her weakness. "I will come alone after this," Arha said. And then, trying to turn away from Khosyl, she felt her legs give way and saw the room turn over. She fainted in a little black heap at the priestess's feet.
"You'll learn," Khosyl said, still breathing heavily, standing motionless. "You'll learn."
dreams and tales. Arha was not well for several days. They treated her for fever. She kept to her bed, or sat in the mild autumn sunlight on the porch of the small house, and looked up at the western hills. She felt weak and stupid. The same ideas occurred to her again and again. She was ashamed of having fainted. No guard had been set upon the tomb wall, but now she would never dare ask Kossil about that. She did not want to see Kossil at all. Never. It was because she was ashamed of having fainted. Often in the sunlight, she would plan how she was going to behave next time she went into the dark places under the hill. She thought many times about what kind of death she should command for the next set of prisoners, more elaborate, better suited to the rituals of the empty throne. Each night in the dark, she woke up screaming, "They aren't dead yet! They are still dying!"